It's a long story, but the lady who used to live opposite us was very friendly with us, and she is much more inquiring mind than I had, and she knew my background, and she said to me, you know, one day, she'd actually moved from there to somewhere not too far away, and we was round there one evening, and she said, have you ever thought about tracing your mother? So I said, well, I have, and I haven't, sort of thing, you know. It's not always the best thing to do. Anyway, cut a long story short, she picked the phone up. She said, well, do you know your surname? I said, well, I do. My proper surname would be Bird. So she said, well, there can't be too many birds living in a little village like that, you know. And so she picked up the phone directory, as we had in those days, and started thumbing through it, you know. And there was about 8 or 9 birds. And Sancton, you know. So she said, well, give one of them a ring. Do you want to do it or me? So I said, no, you do it. So she started, you know, picked up, and she said, well, what was it now? Clifford Bird, she said, Clifford Bird. That was about the first one. She said, I'll try that one first. They can only turn around and say, no, we know nothing. And she picked up the phone, dialed. There was quite a pause, and then he answered, the gentleman answered, you know. And I heard him, because I sat right next to her by then, and I heard him say something about, I know what this is about. So she said, oh, do you? She said, well, I think I do. What did he call me now? It's about Frankie. So she said, no, I don't know Frankie. So she said, are you related to Dorothy Bird? He said, well, yeah, I'm her brother. Ah. Oh. And it sort of went a bit quiet, you know, and there was a long pause, and then she said, well, do you know anything about Mark? So he said, I don't know Mark, you know. This sort of conversation went on for a little while, and then it slowly dawned on him, you know, that what he'd actually tumbled across. She said, well, I'm a lorry driver. And I do see Dorothy about once a month. I pop off, you know, I'm driving to Manchester, and said, I pop off and I see her. He said, what I could do, rather than sort of just confront her straight head on, is sort of ask her, would she like to meet up or whatever, you know, and put it to her that way. And so that would be nice, you know, if you wouldn't mind, you know. And eventually, about a fortnight later, I think it was, he must have driven over there, and within no time at all, I had a big envelope arrive from Eccles, and that was from my mother, including 15, 16, 17 photographs, something like that, and I'd love to meet you, and all that sort of thing, you know. And so we arranged to meet at Euston Station, as you do. And it was teeming with life. Jen came with me, and it was absolutely teeming with life. But it's extraordinary, really. When she got off the train, yeah, instantly, I saw her, and I knew it was her. I got the letters here that she wrote when I first was put into Thomas Corn's care. She wrote, I think, on maybe 12, 13, something like that, occasions to find out how I was getting on, and had I still got straight blonde hair, and can I walk yet, can I talk, am I doing all right, and Christmas card, I believe, not things I can get out and read and look at very often, the responses that Thomas Corum replied were very cold and sort of not encouraging her in any way at all to continue to correspond and ask questions, you know, because now he's been fostered, it's probably best that these things are left to lie, you know. And that was quite distressing to read that, you know. I mean, at least from reading those letters, I was aware of the fact that I wasn't easily let go of, and I wasn't just sort of given up as a piece of furniture. I mean, it really did mean a lot to her. One of the things she did, strangely enough, was to ask me to put my head down, and I put my head down and she checked the back of my neck. And she said, oh yeah, that's my boy. Because apparently where the creases on the back of my head as a baby, you know, they're still there. And she could identify with that. I can remember her holding my hand all the way back very tightly. Discussion-wise, didn't really talk masses on the train. I believe there was discussion, although I was a bit sort of overawed by it all, so I can't recall a great deal of the discussion, but we did talk quite late in the early hours, I think, when we got back, about the whys and the wherefores, and it wasn't by choice, and they thought it best, and, you know, a little bit of background about how times were so different then, and it was hard to appreciate that the pressure's on you, you know. I mean, you don't give up a child just like that. And I mean, she felt that it was, even then, that it was probably the best for me, that I probably had a better education and all that and a better lifestyle than I would have had where we were, you know, where she lived. You know, it was almost like making up for lost time, you know. We went out and about with her, and she just seemed delighted to think that after this sort of period of time, you know, we'd met up, and it was obviously to her and me putting pages back missing from a book. It was, to me, a way of saying, okay, I'm back on earth again now. I know a little more about myself. Meeting my mum, if you like, that was a part of a jigsaw which helped me look at the world in a different way. And prior to that, I felt a little bit like a cork in the sea, you know, a bit tossed and turned and not really sort of got any real roots.